All right, so thanks for coming. I'm gonna tell you guys about what I've been doing for the past 2 years in collaboration with my supervisor, which is Sung-Sik Lee and Peter Luntz. And in today's talk, I'm also gonna talk about some results that were previously obtained by Shuvik Sur, which was one of Sung-Sik's former PhD students. And as the title says, I'm gonna try to show you how non-perturbative effects rise below the upper critical dimension for a particular critical theory. And although it kind of sounds trivial, it is not. And what I'm trying to do today is to give you a technical result. And because of that, I'm just gonna put my conclusions first and tell you what is the takeaway message of this talk. So the first thing that I want you to have in mind is that when you're looking at a quantum critical theory, the first thing that you look at is, or the primary goal is to obtain low energy universal data. And among the set of data, the most important one is the critical exponents. But quantum critical points are not only characterized by critical exponents, they are also characterized by low energy physical observables, which are susceptible to the flow of leading order irrelevant operators of the theory. Now, this is typically a very difficult task, and the main reason for this is that quantum critical theories that we are interested in are in very low dimensionality. And as you lower the dimension, then quantum fluctuations become stronger. So then you have to engineer ways of obtaining this universal data reliably. And one of the most prominent ways is the use of dimensional regularization-based renormalization group schemes. And this works because it allows you to make a systematic expansion close to the upper critical dimension of the theory, where quantum fluctuations are not that strong. And once you get some reliable data in a controlled way, then you hope that extrapolation to the physical dimension of interest will actually capture the physics at that dimension, in particular the low energy physical observables. The other way that it's usually the way you have to go through is to engineer a non-perturbative technique in order to obtain this universal data, but it's usually hard. And so what I want you guys to take away from my talk today is that by using a non-perturbative approach, I'm gonna try to show you that dimensional regularization actually fails on capturing important physical data at integer dimensions. And in particular, what it fails to capture is the low energy physical observables of the theory. It must be said, however, that dimensional regularization is very strong on predicting what critical exponents are. And the main reason why our DIMREG fails on capturing this important data is that there is a non-commutativity between the low energy limit, and I want you to understand it as just the coarse graining procedure, and the limit that fixes the integer dimension. So in order to exemplify this, I'm gonna consider a model, which is a physically motivated model, and it's important on its own, but I'm not gonna get into it as much, which is the antiferromagnetic quantum critical metal. So this is essentially the state that appears in the transition between a normal metal that has a large Fermi surface and say it has fourfold rotational symmetry and a metal with antiferromagnetic order. Now, the theory by itself, the physical theory, is a two-dimensional theory and it's strongly coupled. And let me just tell you what the theory is. So as you cross the critical point, antiferromagnetism kicks in, and when that happens, spin density waves start generating. And those spin density waves have a momentum QAF, which I'm gonna call the ordering wave vector. And at the same time, the Fermi surface develops hotspots, which are discrete set of points that are connected by this ordering wave vector. So the critical theory of the antiferromagnetic metal essentially consists of fermions that live in these hotspots that interact with the quantum fluctuations, or the spin fluctuation, which is a bosonic field. So the model that I'm gonna consider today is just a theory of fermions living on these hotspots, interacting with some boson field, which happens to be a matrix field. And for the sake of generality, I'm gonna assume that there is a SUNC global symmetry and SUNF global symmetry in the theory. Now, the way that these fermions interact with the spin fluctuation is through a Yukawa-like coupling, all right? And so the parameters of the theory are essentially G, which is the strength of the interaction, if you will, and the velocity of the fermion and the velocity of the boson. So these velocities cannot be scaled away, and in particular, it's because the theory does not enjoy rotational symmetry. In particular, it just has a four-fold rotational symmetry. And for the rest of the talk, just think of this theory as a theory of fermions interacting with bosons parameterized by these three couplings. Now, the upper critical dimension for the theory is actually 3 rather than 2. So following what I said before, you can actually do a dimensional regularization analysis of this theory close to 3 dimensions. And it also admits a generalization to any dimension between 2 and 3. And in any dimension, the system corresponds to a antiferromagnetic quantum critical metal that supports a one-dimensional Fermi surface in general momentum space. So as I will show in the following slides, the effective parameters, or if you will, the effective irrelevant couplings of the theory are these combinations of parameters. And the flow of these couplings towards the low energy fixed point are the ones who are going to determine the physical observables at low energies. So let me just present what the results that we got are in terms of energy landscape. So throughout the talk, what I want to do is to explain what these three regions are in the energy versus dimensional plane. And the first thing that I mentioned before is that once you look for low energy universal data, you want to look for the critical exponents. So what we found is that for this theory in any of these dimensions, there is a low energy fixed point that is characterized by these exact exponents. And as you can tell, they are continuous functions of the dimension. On the other hand, you can also determine the low energy physical observables, in particular the correlation functions for the fermions and the correlation function, the two-point function for the bosonic matrix field. And this is the generic form across all these dimensions. And these functions, f of psi, f of zeta, and f of phi, depend on the dimension. And they also capture basically the flow of those leading irrelevant couplings of the theory. So the claim today is that these functions are not, are not continuous functions of the dimension. And to give you an idea of why, let me just look at this function f set, for instance, which take this particular form in 3 dimensions, 2 dimensions, and in between both. And as you can tell, this function is not continuous either in 2 dimensions or 3 dimensions. So what I want to show today is why there is such a discontinuity, and why it's such a discontinuity actually will prevent renormalization group schemes based on dimensional regularization to actually capture the right form of the physical observables. So let me just go for into this energy landscape close to 3 dimensions. In particular, let us start with the theory in 3 dimensions. And the results that you find is that the theory is one loop exact. And the fixed point is characterized by the flow of the fermion velocity to 0, g squared over v to 0, and b over c to an order 1 value. So it is a pretty interesting theory, but it's one loop exact. Now, you ask the question is, what happens if you tune the dimension a little bit away from 3 and use dimensional regularization? Well, you will find that as you go to low energies, the one loop exact stops working. And actually, you have to include an extra quantum correction, which corresponds to this two-loop boson self-energy. Once you include that correction, then you will find that the fixed point is now characterized by the flow of the velocity to 0, which is consistent with this, g squared over v to an order epsilon number, which is also consistent with this. But v over c now flows to 0 rather than flowing to 1. And so as you can tell already is that if you take the epsilon equals 0 limit, the fixed point does not interpolate correctly. And it's quite surprising because in here is where dimensional regularization sort of is at its best. It should work perfectly if you take the small epsilon limit. And the reason why these two fixed points do not interpolate is because there is an energy scale, a crossover energy scale, which has this form and that vanishes at 3 dimensions, and it corresponds to this boundary between region 1 and region 2 that actually prevents the system in 3 dimensions to reach this fixed point. So what this energy scale tells you is essentially that there is a non-commutativity among the low energy limit, which are the blue arrows, and the limit that fixes the dimension. So to speak, what this means is essentially that if you compute the physical observables by going through this blue line, and then you compute them going through this blue line, and then set the dimension to 3, then the two things are not going to match. And this is what I showed in the previous in the previous slide. Now, let me just mention something interesting that appears away from 3 dimensions. The fact that V over C flow to zero will be something that will characterize all of these regions. And it is very important because what it does is that it suppresses an infinite number of quantum corrections. And the fact that G squared over V flows to epsilon, it also means that it suppresses an infinite number of quantum corrections, provided that epsilon is small. So if you want to actually say something about the theory for non-small epsilon, you have to give some asteroids to dimensional regularization to actually capture the real data. And so let me just look at this region. In this region, as I said before, G squared over V will flow now to some order one value. And so there's an infinite number of quantum corrections that you have to resum somehow. And so this resummation method, which is a non-perturbative calculation that corresponds to solving this self-consistent equation, it's basically like giving the right asteroids to the theory. So once you are allowed, once you are able to solve this self-consistent equation, then what you find is that the theory in this region behaves in a very particular way. And in particular, that velocity of the boson that before seemed to be an independent parameter is no longer independent of the fermion velocity. In fact, it is fixed in this way. And the fixed point is also characterized as the region 2 prime over here, which is contained among the region 2, by the fact that V over C flow to 0, and the velocity of the fermion also flows to 0. Now, what is surprising here is that it seems that this self-consistent computation tells you that there is a problem at two dimensions, right? And so to speak, dimensional regularization is telling you that the two-dimensional theory is ill-defined. But in fact, this is not the case. If you actually do the same computations in two dimensions, which is a complete non-perturbative computation, then what you will find is that the way that the velocity of the boson gets fixed, it's no longer divergent at two dimensions, but it is actually cut off by the appearance of this logarithm. And the appearance of this logarithm is not only a characteristic of this self-consistent computation, actually most of the quantum corrections will have this. And what that will make, or that will cause, is that there is an extra diagram that comes into play. So there's an extra quantum correction that you have to be aware of. And this extra quantum correction modifies the flow of these couplings towards the fixed point. And modifying that flow means that it modifies the low energy physical observables. Now, the question is, okay, but what happens if I approach the theory slightly away from two dimensions and compute the physical observables? Well, there's a similar behavior as the one that happens close to three dimensions, namely that there is a crossover energy scale that vanishes at two dimensions that essentially tells you that if you're away from two dimensions, no matter how close you are to it, at sufficiently low energies, this diagram will be unimportant. And as a consequence, the flow of these couplings and the physical observables in this region at very, very low energies will be different from the one that you find in the theory at two dimensions. So I hope so what this means as well is that there's a non-commutativity between the low energy limit and the limit that fixes the integer dimension. So let me just summarize a little bit what this energy landscape means. So if you look at the theory in three dimensions, it's a one loop exact theory. And if you look at region one, which is low energy, but not that low energy, the theory will behave similarly to the one loop exact theory. But what about if you start going away from the upper critical dimension by, say, an epsilon value? Then there's another quantum correction that you have to include. So this is essentially the same as the statement that quantum fluctuations grow as the dimension gets lowered. And if you stray too much away from three dimensions, then actually this monster that you were trying to tame over here becomes infinitely bigger. And then you have to supplement your dimensional regularization with some non-perturbative calculation. And as soon as you cross this boundary into the third region, there's an extra correction that you have to take into account. So what this means is that as you start flowing or moving the dimension from 3 to 2, there's an emergent rise of non-perturbative effects that you have to consider. And I just want to end my talk by telling you guys that this is something that, to the best of my knowledge, have not been seen in any other theory, and in particular is because Yeah, I mean, I think this is one of the first examples where we can tackle the theory in any dimension at low energies with exact control. So yeah, thank you.
We have time for some questions.
I know nothing about this, but my question is, do you have an idea in which type of theories one method will? So you said you have two things that are not commutative, the low energy limit and the dimensional regularization. Do you have an idea in which theories this is?
This commutes?
See this non-commutative behavior and why? Or in which theories we do?
Okay, so in this one is one of the first examples that I know that this appears. There might be a class of theories with similar properties, but I'm not entirely aware of them. I know that for supersymmetric theories, for instance, those limits do commute, and so nothing actually happens. There's no crossover energy scales like this.
And do you have an idea why? Why
these non-commutative? Like my wild guess is the fact that this type of theory that we're considering has like very low symmetry. And so once you have very low symmetry, many things can happen. There's less constraints that you have to obey. In the case of supersymmetric theories, it's like extremely symmetric. So that's like my best guess, I guess. Yeah.
So for the g equals 3, you have it, the ratio of the velocities go to some order one constant.
Right.
Is it known to a higher order than that epsilon expansion if that's?
Right, so the thing is that once you do the epsilon expansion, that one loop result fails. And so what that means is that you actually have to include this other quantum correction. What this quantum correction actually does is that it slows down the flow of one of those velocities, and that's the reason why V over C now flows to an order zero value. So the one loop exact result, it's only for the three-dimensional theory. And actually that has physical consequences in terms of the type of state that you have in each of these three regions. So for instance, the three-dimensional theory is a marginal Fermi liquid as a consequence of B and C flowing to an order one value. But away from three dimensions, actually, the theory becomes a non-Fermi liquid. And so, yeah, you can think of that as the rise of some non-perturbative effects that are important.
Thanks, Peter, again.